Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and Dave's Got Guests. Well, a guest anyway, and I'm very proud and happy to have with me director Karen Coonrod, whom I haven't seen or spoken to since 1996, when I interviewed her back when she was directing Henry VI, Part 1, 2, and 3 at the Public Theater. Well, now she's back directing off-Broadway, as she has been in all the years since, currently doing Julius Caesar at the Lucille Lortel Theater. It's a theater for a new audience production ending March 2nd, so you have a few weeks to go see it, which, of course, we recommend that you do. First of all, thank you very much, Karen, for coming back to talk to me.
Thank you.
And, of course, the question, I heard you ask this on another radio program on WBAI, and I'm sure it's the first question you get asked, why Caesar, why now?
Well, it's a good time for it, isn't it? It's a political play. It raises questions about justice and power, and so it's a good time to be thinking about all this. I was offered the job in May and took it on, and then went to Rome for a day. You know, I was actually working in Orvieto, so it was convenient to go to Rome and walk around and breathe the air. But it feels that now is a time when we've got this dialogue between Republic and Empire, and when we've got we're in a moment of change, actually. We're in a very strange moment that I've never experienced in my life, actually, in our country. And I think that in Rome, where this play is set at the end of the Republic and the beginning of the Empire, but before really the Empire begins. I mean, Caesar's proclivities are that way, and Brutus and Cassius are going back to the values of the Republic, but what happens is that, you know, the borders have expanded, that things are in a moment of great change. And so it's a... There's some similarities. There's some interesting similarities.
Well, actually, now that puts two separate things into my head. The first one I do have to ask is, although you probably would have been, you were young, you did see the late 1960s. You don't think that was comparable of the Republic versus of an even greater revolution, perhaps, than we're having now?
I think that this is more dangerous. I think that this is larger. I think that that was a very dangerous time in our own country, and in fact had resonance around the world too, because there were a lot of rebellions around. I remember being in France when hearing about things happening, you know, with my family. I was there and hearing about things happening in the United States and the riots and the student riots and so forth. But and then there were riots of
Paris,
the same kind in
Paris.
Yeah, we were in Grenoble actually at that moment in the summer, but I remember hearing about that. But now, I mean, there was a great student upheaval, and there was a great, experience of sort of shaking up the status quo. And now, it seems to be just more apocalyptic. You know, there's something, I mean, what with everything that has happened very recently, you know, in our own city,
sure.
Which... You know, and well, you know, a lot of us are living on the edge already. So I mean, it was
spoken like a New Yorker since 1985. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, but the thing is, you know, that happened, and it was just an astonishing event to witness and be a part of, and to see and to experience on every level, internationally, nationally, and potentially personally. You know, all of that happening all at once is astonishing, but. And there's, ever since, you know, there's been much more conversation worldwide, and now we're talking about war. It's really increased the amount of political conversation that's going on in our own, within our borders, about what's happening outside of our borders, it seems to me.
Which would be a good thing, unless
yes,
it all goes
thing.
To hell.
That's a very good thing. So that awareness is a very good thing. You know, and who knows what's to say. I mean, I don't think that any government really is ideal, actually, although I think that there are many good points to to there is hope here. There is hope, and we hang on to that. We try to go back to that dream, and I think that's what Brutus and Cassius were trying to do, too.
So in putting this Julius Caesar together, though, and with all this swirling around, were you consciously working with any specifics related to the people in government now, the people in power now, or is that just more a generic sort of empire struggle that filtered down?
Well, I'm always interested in looking straight at the text and letting the text inform us so that the characterizations are built right on the words of the text. I'm interested also in the topicality. Certain, people, for instance, Caesar, our Caesar, we looked at some images of Lyndon Johnson. We also were talking a little bit about Huey P. Long. We were talking about different characters. With Brutus, we were talking about some people that we know. the possibility, even resonances of Jimmy Carter, perhaps. Just different.
So it isn't just
characters.
The current administration either. Going through the last.
No, I don't think that. I think that there are different figures in our own recent history that have resonance. However, I'm never really interested in creating a topical production because I think that's very limiting and somewhat reductive. It doesn't really interest me actually at all. But it does interest me to get clues or to get ideas from those characters if it's useful, whatever we know from them. What we do learn from, I think Shakespeare more than anybody writes the truth. I think that's what makes the text so, a text that we want to go back to, that keeps opening up the possibility for breathing new life into it. And I think that because of that, the complexity of the humanity is really quite thrilling for an actor to approach. I feel that the humanity in these of these characterizations are very, very complex, in fact. For instance, Cassius is a particular way, explains to the audience at the end of the first scene that he's quite thrilled and happy, in fact, to have, and surprised on some level, to have persuaded Brutus. But he's excited about it and goes on. At the end of the play, he realizes that, the certain things that he felt, he's now moving past. And he says, now I change my mind. He's talking about Epicurus, and having believed, having taken that way of life on, or having believed that way, and now he says, I change my mind. And that's extraordinary, really, for a character in a play to talk about changing his mind, and it's very fresh, it's very exciting, it's very, very, very real.
And one thing, though, what I'd like to do, if you wouldn't mind, is give the audience, or the listeners, a sense of your production. Because it's a little possibly vague in the minds of people listening what you specifically do in this mounting of Shakespeare, which is not in Elizabethan costuming. It's just a sense of
right,
the
sure, absolutely. It's a company of 16, 14 men and 2 women, and they're wearing modern dress, but it's modern dress that we've refashioned in our own way so that we've been able to invent the landscape, invent the entire aesthetic of the production. It's set in a concrete. I love, one response was that we've managed to make a small space monumental, and I love that. I love that response of one of the audience members. It's slabs of concrete that you can see, it's like foundation, actually. You can see the veins, so to speak, the little pieces of metal rod that are inside this concrete. And it's very monochromatic in the beginning. Actually throughout, but there's a shift of color after a slight shift of color. And we concentrate on the story, on what's happening between characters, on the active thoughts, on the desires, on the rhetoric, on the images, on what's happening in the story, in these characterizations, these characters banging against each other, actually. So they are in suits of power. It's an image of power. From the very beginning, there's an image of all the men walking forward, and they're actually, the whole company is singing, and it's a song. It's not a, it's it's a song taken from the phrases that Cicero wrote about in praise of Caesar. It's in Latin, and there are just certain phrases that the composer took out of this particular speech that Cicero wrote in behalf of Marcus Marcellus when Caesar had pardoned him. So I'm always influenced very much by Rome itself, by, you know, in doing these history plays. Like, as you said, I did Henry VI and also King John more recently, and then now Julius Caesar. I'm interested in the time period from which it comes, and then also the time in which it was written, that is Shakespeare, and then the time that we are in now, so that there's a resonance that goes through all three. And I think that can inform our own production and can become very rich, actually.
Well, one of the things that has been said about your work, including things like King John that you've done and Everything That Rises Must Converge, a Flannery O'Connor piece that you did, I think, just a year or two ago, but all through your career is this, and it isn't a battle, it's actually a mix between an academic viewpoint and having a visceral, very visual, very dynamic kind of staging. And you were just telling me before that you also go work through the text. But is there that point, do you ever find a conflict within yourself of, are you trying to get the playwright's voice out there, or is the director who is really the artist using the playwright as the brush? Is that a conflict for you?
Well, I'm always trying to go to the heart of the text that interests me. Whenever it's a you know, Shakespeare text, Flannery O'Connor, I'm always trying to go right to the heart. So I would say that, and I usually try to find in that the surprises that, you know, and it sometimes are in conflict with production history. You know, I find, for instance, that Cassius can be seen as a sort of villain or something, you know, from the get-go. And I think that there's a humanity in his excitement of winning, you know, there's in his excitement. And so going a little deeper than what is perhaps perceived or often perceived, you know, I don't know. That's what I try to do. So I've always thought of it as a dance between the playwright or the text that I'm working with and me, you know. But I'm always trying to go for the heart and just be true to that, so that sometimes it could be very surprisingly spare, you know, in terms of the moment. It could, instead of having lots of stuff thrown at it. So I guess that's
Now, you started with the off Broadway company Arden Party,
mm-hmm.
which you did about 20 shows with them, and or were you the artistic director?
Yes, founder. Yeah, that was in 1987 in June. We started with Taming of the Shrew.
Right, and you've been working pretty steadily off Broadway or regionally, and now internationally as well. Broadway has not happened yet at this point. And one of the things I wanted to point up is that the last Broadway production of Shakespeare was Kelsey Grammer doing Macbeth, somewhat underrated production, I thought, back in June 2000. There hasn't even been whisper of a Shakespeare going to Broadway since, and even that was almost anomalous, and it was a flop. Is Shakespeare almost impossible on Broadway now, considering the economics?
Oh, I don't think so, but I think a lot of people would be scared of it right now. Yeah, I mean, I think it could happen. You know, the question is, could it happen in an American production?
That's right. For a while, we're bringing over all the English companies, because I guess they could work out an equity deal to do that.
That would be a great victory if we had an American production. Thrilling, actually. But, you know, that's a little, I don't know, you know, that seems to be a little fearful prospect, perhaps, to the producers. I don't know. You know.
Moving backward more generally.
Yeah.
Have to ask, going perhaps way back, or maybe it's even recent, what was the most influential theater piece that you've seen?
Oh, golly. Wow. Well, I of all, just going back, seen Strehler's La Tempesta.
Strehler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Tempest, which I've only seen on tape, but that was very influential.
On your work, or just not to the world at large, but I mean to you.
Yeah, very
Why?
Much. Well, for the poetry of it, for the absolute belief in the poetry of the piece, and I mean, I saw that back when I was a student at Columbia, you know, and also Peter Brook has been very influential to me for his writings, and also for what I've read about some of his work before, you know, I was that had happened before I went into theater. Certainly, that was always very influential to me. I see a lot of things that I like, you know, every year. That, I mean, recently at BAM there was an opera. It was one of the Monteverdi operas. It was, in fact, the Return of Ulysses, which I thought was just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful piece of work. And before that, there was a French company, and I was very influenced by that. Let's see, they did. Now I'm forgetting. It was, I think it was El Cid. And I think it was Declan Donnellan who directed that. And it was a beautiful production, also at BAM. Those were productions that I connected to a lot, you know, and felt for their humanity, for their the spare sort of aesthetic and the beauty, and yet the ferocity inside and the poetry of them. Really, really thrilling pieces of work. But I'd say that Strehler and Brook have been very influential to me. Yeah.
And what projects are you currently working on or thinking about working on? Any dream plays or operas that you might...
Well, I am working on Orfeo of Monteverdi. And for a group in Italy, it's going to be in a courtyard, and an open-air production. And I'm working on that. I did a workshop of that last summer in Orvieto. And I'm also doing some other projects with this group in Orvieto. Also going to work on a piece about Elizabeth I. I'm working on creating something with in California. I just did, before beginning rehearsals for Julius Caesar, I did The Visit out there with 75 students, and Mary Lou Rosato, who played Claire Zakanassian, and it was pretty thrilling. We created 85 steel swivel chairs that the audience sat in, and then moved the audience. You know, we actually honored the three acts of with the two intermissions. You know, and we moved around the chairs, and then at the end move the audience up so that they would look down into the space. So it was very exciting. The Visit is an amazing play. You know. So anyway.
Have you, through teaching, because you teach Shakespeare at Yale, and I think you're either directing or teaching in Italy as well, or...
Yeah. Yes.
Have you grown optimistic or pessimistic about the future of theater, either as a playwright's theater or a director's theater, in the years to come?
Oh, I think... Boy, I think that there's always, you know, as long as there are people around, and as long as we don't lose faith in each other and in the possibility of creating something. I mean, there's a lot in the theater that's very defeating and very difficult and very hard. There's no question about it. But I think it's always possible. You can, you know. Things get hard and bad sometimes, but you just pick yourself up and you go forward and believe, and then people start to connect to it. I mean, it's so thrilling. It's immediate. You know, on some level, I can't lose the joy of it, and the audience coming and responding to it. And I mean, that's the final part of the equation is the audience, the final element in terms of creating the theater, the audience being there and creating that dialogue. You know, it's very exciting because the theater is so immediate and is something that allows us to talk and have a response and whatever it is, you know. And what I love is when people say to me, boy, I just keep thinking about this piece. you know, mm-hmm. so that, I mean, the theater is so ephemeral, you know, it's gone, you know, if you have a picture, then you have a picture, or if you have a tape of it, then you have that, but really, in essence, it's over, it's finished, the essence of it has disappeared, and so where it lives is in the people's minds, and that's extraordinary, it's really pretty deep, that, you know, and the more, so that the task is to try to go deep into the imaginations, you know, to, like Emily Dickinson said, talk about, in talking about poetry, that if it blasts off your head, you know, the top of your head, then you know it's poetry. And if it blasts off the top of your head and you get to go inside the imagination of the audience, whether it's an irritating response that they have, which many of them do, or, you know...
Well, how do you know about that? I mean, do you do after-talk?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, or you just hear about people, you know, I mean, people are pretty vociferous about how they feel about it, which I think is great. You know, a lot of people are very... But a lot of people are appreciative, you know, but a lot of people... are agitated or, you know, what have you, but there's, whatever it is, there's a response later, and often I get people, in fact, even recently, even this last week, because we just began the previews for Julius Caesar, people wrote me the next day and said, I'm still thinking about it, I'm still reflecting, it's growing on me, you know, whether the growing means that they start to like it more and didn't like it initially, I'm not sure, but, you know, although that people are, intrigued, you know, and what I've also liked about the audiences is that they are sticking around in the theater and talking about it. Now, somebody said, oh, that's because it's cold outside.
Yeah.
But, you know, no, I love all that perverse stuff. Anyway, but, I mean, it keeps us human. It keeps us humble, I reckon. But anyway, people are actually talking about it, you know, talking about, well, what they saw and what and how it differs from their idea of what it should be, or how surprised they are about some of the characterizations, or how they disagree about it, or, you know, what's the complexity of the humanity, or about, you know, where we are, how apt it is now, and the questions that are being asked, and so that leads people on to other questions, and I think it's exciting, actually.
Well... Thank you for spending some exciting minutes with us, and I wish you best of luck on all your current and future endeavors, and please, folks, playing through March 2nd at the Lucille Lortel Theater, the theater for a new audience production of Julius Caesar. It does sound fascinating. It does sound exciting and pretty visceral. There's no intermission in it.
That's
which
right.
I think is pretty amazing. Was it running about 2.5 hours?
2 hours.
2 hours clean.
2 hours, 7:30 to 9:30.
Folks, you've got to see it. So, thank you, Karen Coonrod, for joining us on Dave's Gone By.
Thanks, Dave.